Spark, stories from advocates for global change, a podcast from the Swiss Young Academy.
Welcome to another episode of the Spark podcast. In this episode, we will be discussing AI and its impact on various fields. For those who are new to the podcast, Spark is a platform where we, as young people and students, explore inspiring academic paths and innovative solutions to tackle the big challenges of our time. I am joined today by my co-host, Zora.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Tanish. Pleasure to be here. My name is Zora, and I am a student in life science engineering.
Which semester are you in, and what's your specialization like in life science engineering?
So I am in my fourth semester of my bachelor's, and it's still very basic, but I could imagine in the future going into more neuroscience part or more cancer research.
Our main topic today is AI. So Zora, I'm just wondering, how do you use AI?
Well, like many others, I started really becoming conscious of AI tools with the arrival of ChatGPT. It is fascinating to see the possibilities of AI applications, especially also in the domain of life sciences, which I am studying.
What's an example of an application in your studies of AI?
There's really interesting applications in the domain of cancer research, where AI tools can very accurately predict tumor cells in images where humans don't really see the cells yet, but AI tools can be trained to recognize them way earlier, and thus, like, they pave the way for personalized medicine. How about you, Tanish? Do you use AI in your studies?
Yeah, so I'm studying economics at the University of Basel, and I use AI in my studies for applications such as statistical modeling, coding, and in many cases, it helps me understand the topic in a greater depth than before.
AI is the topic of the three upcoming episodes. With our guests, we will talk about how AI could help to address some of the biggest problems currently faced by humanity, such as climate change and global medical challenges. But we also ask, do we have to be scared about the power it holds and who gets to use it? And I find myself wondering whether the advantages of this technology can actually make up for its immense consumption of resources.
So in the past months, we've had the chance to talk to researchers working with and on AI.
Yes, so I got to meet Silvia Quarteroni, who works at the Swiss Data Science Center, from which you will hear today.
And I got the chance to meet Andrea Rizzoni from the Dalle Molle Institute of Artificial Intelligence in Lugano, where he researches the use of AI as a tool to fight the consequences of climate change.
On the last episode of the series on AI, you'll get to meet Pamela Delgado and Emmanuel Senft, two members of the Swiss Young Academy, who are both researchers in the domain of AI.
So today's interview is with Silvia Quarteroni, the Chief Transformation Officer of the Swiss Data Center in Lausanne. Zora, can you tell me a bit about her and what her research is like?
So the Swiss Data Science Center helps organizations, public and private, in an attempt to become more data-driven. Their buildings are located on the EPFL campus, where I met her.
Bonjour.
I was excited to meet a female researcher coming from a computer science background, which is to this day very male-dominated. She provided me with insights into the importance and power that lies in data and its connection to AI, as well as some really surprising facts about the long history of AI, much longer than I could have imagined. So let's jump right into and hear from Silvia herself.
Since 2019, I've read you are in your current position at the Swiss Data Science Center. Can you explain what the aim of this organization is and name a concrete example of what you do in your daily work?
Sure. So the SDSC, which is short for Swiss Data Science Center, of course, is a joint initiative between EPFL and ETH Zurich, which was launched a few years ago with the ambition of creating expertise and technology transfer in data science, not only for the benefit of academia, but also for the benefit of society and the industrial sector. So my main role is to ensure that our team of data scientists, which deal particularly with industry and public sector, can support companies and organizations in their journey to become more data-driven. And this goes through projects, usually, that involve data scientists providing a solution that meets a business requirement. So my objective and ideal is to make sure that these solutions that we develop are actually met by users or customers who adopt them and draw value from them.
So you mentioned data scientists. We're at the Swiss Data Science Center. So maybe what connection is there between data science and AI?
Yeah, this is a very good question. And we get asked this question quite a lot because indeed there's a big intersection between data science and AI. So data science is the practice of decision making supported by data. And this can be done through a different sets of tools. Some are purely statistical. For example, you don't need to do AI to do data science. But in the vast majority of cases, the methods that we use in data science are machine learning methods. I think data science refers more to the, in a way, business or objective parts. So what do you want to do with your data, essentially? And AI is a set of technologies that can meet the need of data science.
How do organizations, well, public and private, interact with your organization?
We have two main ways of collaborating with organizations. One is through expertise. So what we offer is our ability to support either through training or through workshops that are dedicated to focusing on the topics and business questions that these organizations have. And then we have a second way of collaboration, which is much more hands-on. We have data scientists in our team who can actively work on delivering solutions to meet their problems. The problems can be, for example, predicting whether certain patients will develop certain side effects during a treatment, or they can be allocating products to the right markets in the right amounts, given the nature of those products and the demand that those markets have. They can be predictive maintenance of solar panels and heat pumps. So depending on the domain, essentially, and the business, the questions will be different and we meet them with the same AI data-driven approach.
You work with many companies across diverse industries. So what are currently the main applications of AI tools?
There are quite a few. I would say some are very classic AI applications, forecasting, optimization of processes. They have a lot of intersection with statistical methods or mathematical methods. And then there's a growing trend, of course, towards generative AI, which is the one that gave us, obviously, the latest computer vision and natural language processing applications, such as ChatGPT.
Just a quick note, generative in this context means that it creates new content such as images or texts that did not exist in this manner before.
And here we have more and more companies that try to put together systems that help them to access their internal information in an efficient way and to interact with their users, either internal or their end users, so the customers, in a way that helps them find information or solve problems.
So what motivated you to pursue a career in natural language modeling? I've read that this is where you wrote your thesis about. So where do you also see the biggest potential in this field?
So the motivation for me, well, I came from a rather different path. So in high school, I studied anything but STEM disciplines. So I studied Latin, Greek, Italian literature and similar. And what made me super interested in computer science was the idea of search engines and how they worked. This was quite a few years ago. So I enrolled in computer science out of curiosity mainly. And then I found myself particularly drawn to all the topics around artificial intelligence, natural language processing, machine learning, and this became a passion. So then I indeed decided to study and to research during my PhD question answering system. So let's say the original chatbots in a way. That was about 15 years ago. And I pursued research in this direction. And now I'm observing that a lot of the foundation work that was done 20 years ago or even more is actually picking up and, of course, evolving towards new highs. And where I think it's evolving, there are many directions. One is, of course, trying to integrate more and more logical thinking into machines, because today when we deal with chatbots, we have systems which are very good at reproducing sequences of words and giving us the impression that, you know, since there is language, there is intelligence, but sometimes there is no reasoning capability in these tools. And so there's a lot of research going into the direction of giving machines more abstraction power and more reasoning power. And this is one of them. And then there's this whole direction of, you know, using the same techniques that manage language very well and adopting them to other types of objects in language, if you like, or text. So representing multimodal, so different, you know, formats of information, if you like, such as a patient profile in its entirety, you know, all the aspects, all the measurements you can take on a patient, all the comments you can write on a text about a patient, the genomics data, the metabolomics data, all these omics data all together into one single representation.
What are there alternative ways, or like how can people make the transition from one thing? There's that you mentioned Latin and literature to computer science to AI.
So I think there are many paths that lead to AI. And the proof is that, for example, within the Swiss Data Science Center, we have very few computer scientists and we have many physicists, mathematicians, some economists, you know, people who studied biologies or neuroscience. And I think this is, by the way, our great, you know, wealth that we can count on the multidisciplinary aspect. And I think that the common aspect between all of these people is their capability to reason about problems in a very pragmatic way and their ability to draw information out of data. So there are quite a few ways that you can get to a career like this. And all of these bring something that is different from the others. So people who, for example, have a former experience in physics, they will be able to model problems in a very, you know, rigorous way. People who have a background in biology will be able to understand very complicated processes that happen in the body that will largely contribute to explaining the machine learning models that are used in a biomedical domain. So each skill can contribute in a very positive way to the deployment of AI solutions, which are basically just one, you know, set of tools in addition to all the others that people bring from their experience.
So I will now move on to some questions about the evolution of AI tools and the current impact they have. So AI has been around for longer than I think most of us are aware, me included. So what are some of these older, I would say, applications?
Yeah, definitely. It's been around for at least 75 years. So that makes it a pretty ancient discipline. I think the first, at least commercial applications of AI were the ones that we started to see in the 90s, those who were there. Classifiers, if you like, to separate, for example, spam from normal email, or to categorize newspaper articles into different topics. These tools came out very early on. And they started to be systematically adopted in companies in their document management systems in the late 90s, I would say. And then slowly more things happened in this direction. There was, of course, an evolution also in computing power and in the capability of, you know, designing algorithms that would meet certain purposes. So we started seeing more and more the idea of deep learning being applied to AI, in particular in text, but also in images. And in the more recent times, 20 years ago, maybe, we've started seeing particularly efficient tools to manage voice, so speech processing, being able to transform basically a sound wave into a sequence of words with very little error. By the way, this task was very error-prone until a few years ago. So 15 years ago, you would have what was called a word error rate. So, you know, how many words you would get wrong. The average of good systems for English was 23% word error rate. Still, you could figure out, you know, what was being said. And also, we as humans are not so, you know, so good. So we would also have a word error rate of something. But then what we started seeing with deep learning is that, you know, Microsoft, when they published figures for 8% word error rate, which was superhuman. And then people got interested in this. And of course, all the tools that come with the processing of language came about. And we can, you know, dictate to our phones and similar things. And we can talk to our assistants, of course. And a similar path we've observed with image and with text. using more and more efficient models, drawing from larger and larger amounts of data, and of course enabled by more and more complex infrastructure that can digest a lot of data and train on a lot of data.
So why do you think it is that AI has become so much more talked about in recent years, and especially since the appearance of ChatGPT?
So for sure, one factor is that we can do much more with AI, and in particular generative AI, than we could do before with more traditional methods. But I think the most determining factor is the human factor. So people, when ChatGPT came out, I mean, ChatGPT was not a fully new application. GPT was already there. There had been like three GPTs before that particular one that was released behind ChatGPT. But still, what really changed was the decision by OpenAI to open up the AI solution to a direct interface with the public. So people could chat to an AI instead of just issuing a query on a search engine that was powered by AI, because let's not forget that the T in GPT is Transformers, which is a technology that Google invented a few years earlier, 2017. So like Google was the original mastermind behind this technique. But, you know, this was kind of overshadowed by the fact that ChatGPT came out and people started appreciating directly something that they had only indirectly interacted with in the past. Recommender systems like you would find on, Amazon.com or Netflix or Spotify, these are all in a way AI-driven, and people have been using them for a long time. And personalization is one of the key features of commercial products nowadays. But talking to a machine brought the attention of people to a whole different level, and that's how it started, I think.
So do you think the AI hype will pass?
I hope it will, because that will mean that AI is an integral part of our daily lives and people accept this. And also people have a sufficient degree of acquaintance and knowledge with the topic that they're a bit less afraid and a bit more active users. And I think we're still in a phase where we're not there yet. But I think we're getting closer and closer, because we take advantage of AI-powered tools on our daily basis much more than we did before. One example is if we use conferencing solutions like Zoom or Microsoft Teams, we have a lot of extra features that come from AI, such as closed captioning or summarization and similar that we didn't have before. And these are commodities that we now take for granted. So as much as we use this, we might as well say, okay, using a chat tool is a normal way to, you know, live my daily life without fears.
So how do you imagine this technology will develop in the coming years? And maybe which fields do you see the most potential in?
So regarding the most potential, personally, I always think of medicine as the biggest promise of AI. And well, there is already some delivery, of course, which makes that promise more concrete. Medicine, why? Because we're evolving towards personalization in this field, which means instead of treating patients with therapies, drugs that work with the majority of patients but can cause side effects to some of them and are toxic to some of them and do not work very simply for some of them, we're evolving towards having a perfect match with the individual characteristics of each patient, thanks to the fact that we are able to select similar individuals who have responded well to a therapy, for example. And this selection is based on a deep representation, AI-driven representation of these patients. So we create a match in a space that is abstract, in a latent space, in a way that is the representation space created by AI. And thanks to this, we can select patients better. This is just an example. There are many others. Of course, many cite computer vision on imagery, like radiology imagery or detecting cancerous cells in a Petri dish. All of these are excellent ways to support physicians in performing their daily work. So there are many in this direction, and I think there are many in several others. And I think in particular in countries like Switzerland, which are very strong on manufacturing and high quality precision and similar, and there are many opportunities there too in optimizing the way that products are produced and manufactured.
So moving on to the subject of maybe challenges and also like the misuse of AI, how do you see the role of AI evolving in how new generations might use or even misuse it?
Well, AI is basically a set of tools in my vision perspective, let's say. And of course, the misuse depends on the individuals that adopt AI in a certain way rather than another. Of course, when you have a very powerful tool, you can make very big mistakes. So this is obviously inevitable, and it would be hypocritical to not to mention this. On the other hand, I think that as much as people have a conscience in, you know, their daily work and their daily lives, there is no reason why just the availability of a new tool or a tool that has evolved in a direction that makes it very powerful, well, there is no reason that this would lead to an inevitable misuse. Of course, some actions must be taken so that people are aware of the possible, let's say, drifts that using AI tools can constitute. For example, misinformation is one of these examples. So it's very easy to produce misinformation using AI tools because, you know, AI tools excel at generating quickly and plausible text, for example, or even images or videos or even fake voices. So it's clear that this possibility exists and people need to be aware of it and they need to exert their critical sense in order to validate the information they receive. So there's an educational, let's say, aspect that comes into play, and there's a critical thinking aspect. And then people, of course, need to be aware that the same way that, you know, certain processes are defined and regulated, so you can't, for example, drive if you don't wear a seatbelt or if you have drank too much, for example. Well, the same goes with driving an AI-powered car or, you know, it's an extra layer of awareness that needs to be created, in my opinion.
So I think many people nowadays are feeling threatened by the side of being replaced by AI tools. What insights can you maybe share on this aspect of AI?
Well, first I want to share that there is a lot of negative narrative around AI. And I think this is, you know, convenient for some people to spread around because it's much simpler to, leverage emotions than to explain complicated mathematical topics. And therefore, it's much easier to, get clicks on a source of information by saying something provocative about AI than explaining how it works and what opportunity it creates economically. But this is my opinion, of course. In general, what I can say is that for sure, AI, especially its applications of today, have a huge potential impact on the daily lives of basically all sorts of people, not just, you know, IT practitioners, but people in all disciplines of all ages, because all of us are in a way consumers of AI and some of us are professionally impacted. So it would be wrong to say that the impact is limited. I think the impact is important. I think that there will be the redefinition of some tasks in different professional categories. And these are almost all professional categories may be impacted. So it's important to take this into account, not in terms of, you know, being replaced, but in terms of being enhanced or having extra tools that it's important to know, same as when we learned to use email or when we learned to use, I don't know, certain IT tools in our companies. Then AI also creates opportunity. I mean, there are many estimates that are going around. Some are very positive, for example, for the Swiss, basically, increase in the economy. So, I mean, worldwide, the projections are trillions more dollars being generated by AI-related features or tools or professions. Of course, you have to take these estimations for what they are. But yeah, it's not just going to be a replacement. It's also going to be the creation of new types of positions because somehow this new economic opportunity will need to be sustained and sustained by people, which will create demand and will offer products. And this will be, in a way, a virtuous cycle.
And make a transition to some, well, professional challenges and skills, maybe also achievements. So I've read the statistics. In 2010, the percentage of women in a Bachelor of Computer and Communication Sciences at EPFL was around 10%. Did you encounter any challenges as a woman in such a male-dominated field?
Let's say that when I enrolled in computer science, in 1999, so a while ago, I, for some strange reason, I was not aware of this huge difference. And I think in a way this was beneficial because I didn't, you know, need to worry about that part. As a student and as a professional, I think I haven't been strongly impacted by this aspect, but also I realized that there have been a couple of occasions in which, for example, I felt that my choice of computer science needed to be explained, which was a bit funny. I think that one thing that I regret in a way or that I wish were different now that I'm a mom to a girl and a boy, by the way, is the, let's say, the narrative, once again, that is associated to these disciplines, which is always of disciplines that are very difficult and, you know, not friendly and somehow not appealing, which is especially present across girls. I don't know why exactly. And this is too bad because then perhaps this has an impact on their choice of other disciplines instead of computer science and STEM in general, which is a great family of disciplines, you know, to be working in. So for me, the only real solution to this problem, because I think it is a problem, is showing examples of people of different kinds choosing the disciplines and showing that they can be very fulfilled in their careers, be they men, women, or otherwise.
So what advice would you give to young people, and well, especially young women, who want to start a career in the AI field?
My advice would be to really pick what they love. If they have a specific direction that interests them, pursue that direction. This is especially true in research when you do a PhD. I mean, in the best case scenario, you're in for 3 years of individual work on the same topic, so you better like that topic. So picking what you like is really important. And then to... Well, the usual advice which I hear for myself, which I find are very true, are to not refrain from asking questions and trying to really go in depth within the field that you're researching or studying and not feeling like you have to justify anything.
What skills and passions are crucial for succeeding in the field?
I think there are many fields and subfields, and you can use different skills in different ways and succeed at different levels. So one skill for sure that is very useful is the ability to, analytical ability. So being able to, you know, take a problem or a subject and, go in detail within the topic, decompose it and try to understand every single bit of it. And the other part, which is complementary in a way, is to be able to explain, which means having synthetic ability. So if you can simplify a complex concept to a level that you can explain it to, you know, a layman, then in this case, you have really mastered the topic. And then it's not a skill, but it's a characteristic in a way. I think being curious really, you know, is the key to everything, because if you're curious, you're engaged. And if you're engaged, you learn better and you retain information better. So you're able to really distill information in your mind that's going to stay with you forever. If you don't have this curiosity and engagement, then the knowledge you will gather will be stale at some point and you will discard it. And it's too bad.
So what has been maybe the most rewarding aspect of your career so far?
Well, let's say I'm a happy engineer in general. Very happy about my choice, although I could have done other things, which would probably have made me equally happy. But I think the most rewarding part is that when I talk at different kinds of events, be it, a lesson with students or a corporate event or just a public speaking event, people come to me and tell me, thanks to you, I have understood something. And for me, this is, you know, the best moment, best high that I can achieve.
So I think we're going to move to a conclusion now. So if you could bust one myth about AI, what would it be?
Definitely the myth that AI will replace us as human beings. I think we don't realize the complexity of our minds. We tend to associate to AI big reasoning capabilities, the capability to, master new situations. But currently, AI is totally unable to do so. And I think for a long, long time, we will not be able to create AI architectures that will rival us in these two respects.
What final message would you like to offer our audience and about the future of AI?
I think the message I want to share is that everybody will be shaping this future. So AI is a set of tools that kind of respond to the demand of actual people, the needs of actual people. So if as users or customers in a way of these solutions, so we express our demands in a certain direction, those demands will be met in a certain way, and vice versa. So we have an active role to play is my main message about the future of AI, which is much more a human issue or problem or topic than it seems.
Thank you so much for sharing your answers, your insights with us, and see you for next time, maybe.
Yeah, thank you for your questions, and I look forward to another opportunity to exchange.
This was Silvia Quateroni from the Swiss Data Center in Lausanne. What are your main takeaways from this discussion, Zora?
I found the section about the challenges that are created by AI particularly interesting. Sylvia has an intriguing perspective on this. She sees AI as basically a toolbox, which is not inherently good or bad, but it really depends on what we decide to do with it. Another point I found fascinating is how having a direct interface where users interact with the artificial intelligence in a more direct way has made AI so much more talked about. Although AI tools have been around for far longer. Did you know about this?
Yeah, that's very interesting. I had no clue AI tools have been around for so long. My earliest recollection of knowing about using an AI has always been ChatGPT, which is the most common tool in the world.
However, my main takeaway from this interview has been the fact that we all interact with AI. Everyone is impacted, but it also means that all of us can help shape the future and evolution of AI. What has struck you the most in this talk?
Yeah, the point that struck me the most is that one of the key applications of AI is personalization, whether in medicine through personalized treatments or in social media where algorithms curate content based on our preferences. This will be an interesting link to our conversation with Andrea Emilio Rizzoli, who researches these phenomena.
Exactly. So this will be our next interview. And regarding that, did you know that a now widely used technology for voice recognition was actually developed in Ticino back in the 90s?
More about that in our next episode.
Goodbye, everyone.
Spark. Stories from advocates for global change. A podcast from the Swiss Young Academy. Hosted by Julia Knuchel, Tanish Shingi, and Zora Althaus. Produced by the Podcast Schmiede.